It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As gas-powered vehicle technology begins to fade into the past, like a dying battery, we explore this transition period to electric vehicles and what to learn from car museum relics. Call in with questions and comments about cars, past, present, and future, how you view this evolution. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Don Bondas is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum in Hartford, northwest of Milwaukee. Don, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much.
Well, yesterday we saw the EPA proposing its strictest vehicle emission rules to date in an effort to speed up electrification. Historically, how effective are government regulations at influencing the car industry's trajectory?
They've definitely had an influence. And as far as electric vehicles go, Norway is a country that has seen enormous jumps in the number of electric vehicles there. In 2022, 4 out of 5 cars there were purchased were electric vehicles. And there were a number of government incentives, no road tax, tolls, public parking fees. So at least in Norway, the government regulations were definitely having an effect. It's uncertain what effect that might have in the future here, though.
Right, because the Biden administration now wants most new cars to be electric by 2032. How might this compare to any time in history when a technology adoption was so heavily pushed by the federal government? Can you think of any parallels?
I can't think of any where the government was pushing it, but in the earliest days of the automobile, about the turn of the century, you know, about 1900, late 1890s, very early 1900s, the split between gas, steam, and electric vehicles was not exactly equal, but very close. And at that point, gasoline won out. And part of it was just the practicality of it. Electric vehicles at that time had a much shorter range, so they could only go about 30 or 40 miles in some of those earliest years. And you had to stop and recharge. And there weren't other places where you could recharge. You were probably, you know, doing that primarily in cities. But the gas-powered vehicles, and the same thing, you had to stop for water with a steam-powered vehicle. So in that early kind of tug of three-way, you know, three different directions, the gasoline vehicles won out.
Imagine if electric had won out and where we'd be today.
Right, but part of it, even then as now, part of it is, I think, the infrastructure. You know, even today, the electric vehicles in many cases have a shorter range yet. And when you get farther west and in more rural areas, there are fewer opportunities for recharging. And I think, you know, that is changing rapidly, but it's still a factor.
What have you seen in terms of the evolution of seatbelts and, you know, more recently backup cameras and some of these real game changers for vehicles?
Well, and seatbelts are one of those things that's interesting. When seatbelts were first introduced in the late 1940s, there was kind of some pushback because when they were put in, like with Nash, that's a Wisconsin, was a Wisconsin auto manufacturer. And when seatbelts were put in vehicles, they were viewed as, oh, well, your vehicle is unsafe. So then seatbelts were taken out. Of course, they came back fairly rapidly. But it's just, it's interesting how the perspective changes on that.
You know, would the proposed regulations that we're seeing now essentially spell the end of the internal combustion engine? I'm wondering how much of a pivot point are we here in the next chapter of vehicles?
I think it is a significant point, but I don't know that it would be the absolute end of the internal combustion engine. I think that especially, like I mentioned before, with more rural areas and going points west, I think hybrids could be very attractive. So if you are traveling in those remote areas, you like electric primarily, but you have that the gasoline backup. But yeah, I don't think it's in, because I think there's always going to be people who like the gasoline engines. I always think there's going to be, you know, part of the market who likes that.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the evolution of automobiles with Don Bondas, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum, you can join in this car conversation at 800-642-1234. Your questions and your comments, they're welcome. Email ideas at WPR.org. Don, last month, the parent companies, Stellantis and General Motors, they both said they're discontinuing their respective Dodge Challenger and Chevy Camaro gas-powered muscle car lines. And American muscle cars have really defined an era of car manufacturing. What do you think is the significance of the end of the rumble car?
Well, I think it is a sign of the times where, you know, cars are, you know, everything's going electric, whether it's pickups, whether it's cars. So I think it is a sign of the times, but when you look back, it says it's the end now. They might reintroduce something like that 10 or 20 years in the future. Mm. I'm not sure, but you've seen other manufacturers where they will stop making a certain vehicle. Ford quit making their Taurus and almost immediately brought it back. They quit making the Ranger and they've brought that back. So it's probably the end for now, but I don't know that it's necessarily the end forever.
Don't ever shut the door on those, right, on those models, especially those ones that have such a history. You know, what can we learn about the design and styling and the choices that were made long ago by these automakers that seem to pop up in cars today, or maybe that influence the look and feel of modern vehicles?
It is true. It's interesting to take a step back and look at how the pendulum swings back and forth, or things come back into style. And that's everything. A lot of people think that front wheel drive is something that came about in the late 20th century, and it was much earlier. The late 1920s, you were seeing some of the earliest front wheel drive vehicles. The Cord L29 was one. The Ruxton was another one. And the Kissel Motor Car Company, and the Kissel car was made here in Hartford for 25 years, but they were involved in that front wheel drive Ruxton. And when they were introduced, it was a horrible time. It was right around the time of the stock market crash. So the timing couldn't have been much worse to introduce a higher end vehicle like that. But then the Tornado came along in the late 60s, and but the front wheel drive has a deeper history than what a lot of people think. And even colors will come and go. You look at the late 1920s, early 1930s, tans were a very in color. And if you look a little farther forward, the late 1980s, the early 1990s, those tans were also in style. And currently, you see a lot of black, silvers, grays, whites. Those have been very much in style for a while. So you see those things come and go, but you also see it in just the overall styling. The more modern Camaros and Mustangs definitely have throwbacks to their late 60s, early 1970s body styles. Years ago, you saw the PT Cruiser, and that definitely had retro styling. So you do see things come back in a different format.
I'm just envisioning, you know, the fashion runway with vehicles going down it. You know, what about the stick shift? CarMax says fewer than 3% of vehicle sales were manual transmission. That was back in 2020. A nearly 90% drop in popularity since the 90s. Is it the end of the stick shift?
I don't think so with that one. And I know if with pickups, there is a desire for people who want to buy a manual transmission. And the major manufacturers have quit doing it because the demand is, you know, they think the demand is not there, but there are people out there who would purchase a manual if they could, you know, if they could. So I'm not sure, but it's definitely something that's changed. It seems like the manual transmissions are primarily in sports cars now.
You talked about the batteries and the gasoline, the steam. What other materials have automakers used to power cars over the generations?
Well, those are the primary ones that mm-hmm. have been used to just for regular passenger vehicles, that it was the gasoline, the steam, and the electric were the main ways.
Don Bondas leads the Wisconsin Automotive Museum as we explore historically significant vehicles of the past, especially in Wisconsin, how they inform modern cars on the roads today and this transition to electric. Call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With the rapid growth in EV sales and car companies racing to ramp up their models and offerings, we ask a car museum what we should make of this moment. Call in with your questions and comments about the evolution of vehicles, how you see it, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Don Bondas is here, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum in Hartford. Don, let's shine a light here on Kissel for a moment. Second longest lasting local car manufacturer, made luxury automobiles in your museum's hometown of Hartford for 25 years. How did Kissel make its mark on the auto industry?
Well, from the start, Kissel was in the game to make a higher quality automobile. And that's what they did. Henry Ford, for instance, was in it to build a car for the masses, but Kissel was in it to make that higher quality vehicle and to be known for their durability and styling. Kissel was well known for winning hill climb contests in the early years. And it was one of those cars of the stars. There were a lot of well-known names of the day who were driving a Kissel. It was William Randolph Hearst, Amelia Earhart, Mary Pickford. So, like I said, some pretty big names. And Kissel even experimented with an electric vehicle. And it's kind of interesting. We don't have a lot of evidence. There was one article published in about 1909 where they indicated they were going to be making an electric vehicle. And there's one photo that we have from the archives that shows essentially a chassis with a lot of batteries on it and an employee out in front of the factory building. Mm. The electric vehicles did not come to pass, but Kissel also had announced around the same time that they would begin building trucks, and they did start building trucks. So I think that perhaps they realized they had bitten off more than they could chew. And it's also interesting is the Kissel brothers who were starting the automotive company, Will and George, the first car they purchased was actually a steam car. And they got the bug by buying that first steam car and selling some first steam cars. But then when they were making a car of their own, it wound up being a gas-powered vehicle.
What is your favorite Kissel on display at the museum, I wonder, and why does it speak to you?
Oh, everybody, most people go for the Goldbug, the mm-hmm. Speedster that was one of those cars of the stars. But I really like some of the mid-1920s Kissels with some of their styling, because they had a triple body stripe and they had a louver stripe. And the artillery wheels are one of those elements that you've seen that styling come back in some trucks where it almost looks like it's a wood spoked wheel. And with cars of that time, you didn't see the exposed wood. today people always love seeing the wood graining, and you didn't see that at that time. There wasn't the treated lumber. So paint was a protectant, and it was also a styling opportunity. So those mid-1920s Kissels would have, you know, a specific wheel color and a wheel stripe. And we have a couple of those here at the museum that are so correctly detailed. I think it's really interesting, really nice to see.
Super elegant. I always wonder what's in the trunk of antique cars. Like, what did they value carrying around back then versus what we carry with us now? Was it a spare tire and jack? Were there other tools? What do you know about trunks?
There could be tools. Sometimes there were toolboxes that were mounted right on the running boards. Depending on the style of the car, sometimes the spare tires were mounted as a side mount up close to the front of the car. Sometimes they were mounted on the rear. It might be one, it might be two. But an actual trunk, in a lot of cases, was like how we use suitcases today.
Hmm.
That, you know, if you were traveling, it would be what you were taking to go somewhere for a week. So it was a lot of times probably personal items like that. And the trunks were removable on those earliest cars. So you could just pick it up and take it off like a 19th century traveling trunk. And we've got examples of that here at the museum too.
Oh, wow. Was it more than the Great Depression that led to the demise of Kissel?
It was essentially the Great Depression.
Okay.
That led to it. It was a high-end car. People were cutting back, and there were names far bigger than Kissel with car manufacturers who did not make it out of the 1930s. And Auburn, Cord, and Duesenberg are three of those big names that a lot of people recognize. None of those companies made it out of the 1930s either.
Hmm. How much of the Kissel cars were assembled right there in Hartford? I mean, what came at all pre-assembled for these people putting them together?
The Kissel prided itself on, at times, they were saying over 90% of the vehicle was produced in Hartford. So they had the body department, the paint department, upholstery. At the very beginning, they were using a different engine, but for the majority of the company's run, they were making their own engine. At the very end, they were modifying a Lycoming engine, but it was built here in Hartford. It was a custom-built car, and that meant you could get any color that you wanted, which meant that you could make some questionable choices. We have documentation that someone wanted and got a pistachio and lilac Kissel, the purple and green Kissel. And the James Montgomery Flagg, the illustrator who did the Uncle Sam illustration with I Want You for the U.S. Army, had several Kissels in succession. And there was one of his speedsters. We have a letter indicating what he wanted it to look like. And the letter says that he sent a sketch along. Would love to have that sketch, but unfortunately we don't have it. But the car that he wanted was an ivory body with fuchsia fenders and a green interior.
That will take some second looks there as it drives by.
I think he was probably noticed.
But I'm sure, the company would make them because that certainly was help keeping them afloat. It's what the customer wanted.
Right. And that's where they wanted to be known as a custom built car. And they were doing the whatever color you wanted for an additional fee right from the start. There were standard colors, and if you deviated from the standard colors, that's where the additional fee came in. But there were, like it was mentioning before, there were color trends, in the earliest part of the century, just like there are now. In the earlier years of automobiles, the dark Brewster greens were an in color, and that was whether it was a Kissel, whether it was a Nash, whatever whoever the manufacturer was, the dark blues as well. But there were a lot of bright colors. Vermilion was one that was used even in the 19 teens, and that's sort of a scarlet orange red. So the photos were primarily black and white, but it wasn't the cars that were all black. That's a misconception.
Don Bondas, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum, as we tour through the evolution of automobiles and how they speak to cars today at this point with electrification. 800-642-1234. Turning to Tesla here, formed less than 20 years ago, currently the most valuable car company in the world. How do the popular cars of an era reflect that period in history as you talk about all these flamboyant colors?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if, you know, if the it seems like the colors are starting to come back, and Tesla is, I think they, you know, they are the most successful with electric vehicles, and it'll be interesting to see if that continues to be the case moving forward. There was a recent story that came out about Ford not being profitable with their electric vehicles currently, but they anticipate being profitable within the next few years.
And Ford, having such a long history, having built cars for over 100 years, you'd think they can figure it out.
Yes, and I think it sounds like, from what I've read, it sounds like they do have it figured out and that they will get there in the near future.
Don, thank you so much for joining us and taking us on this tour through history. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been fun.
Don Bondas is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum that is in Hartford, northwest of Milwaukee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.